90.3 KNBA and the title track to Emotions and Math. It's new music from Margaret Glaspie. 8:25 in front of Margaret Glaspie, we heard music from Sylvan Esso and Die Young. Head and the Heart in there, classic Joni Mitchell. And we started out at the top of the hour with Jason Isbell and the 400 unit, If We Were Vampires. And remember, Jason Isbell and the 400 unit will be Tali Slanger's guest tonight on the World Cafe at 6 o'clock right here on 90.3 KMBA. 8:26, it is the Morning Line program for Monday morning. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hey, listen, the Acoustic Alaska Guitar Camp is coming up at the end of next month. Wow, it's almost August. You can learn from international instructors while enjoying the experience of campfires and music and singing kumbaya and making s'mores and all that kind of good stuff. It's the annual camp sponsored by KMBA, August 27th through September the 2nd. And you can find a complete list of instructors and full camp information online at kmba.org. It's the Morning Line program for Monday. I'm Danny Preston.
And I'm Frank Scheiflick. So, one of the things that's happening this weekend, there's a couple things happening that are relating to our guest today. We've got an event on Wednesday that's kind of an introduction Wednesday the 26th from 7 to 8:30, there's an event at the St. Elizabeth and Seton Parish there on Huffman Road, meeting our guests in a little bit more detail than we will be doing today. But I've got Friar Neil, Dr. Ambrosio, as well as Bill Pelkey with the Journey of Hope organization, From Violence to Healing is the what it says on the logo here. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Thank you. And I also represent Alaskans Against the Death Penalty, and we're having a special thing Friday night, the 28th, at the home of Nancy Grosek, 2512 St. Elias Drive. And we're going to have Father Neil and Joe Ambrosio are going to be the guest speakers. Joe was on death row in Ohio for over 20 years for a crime he didn't commit. And Father Neil is also has a degree in law and in nursing, and got in contact with Joe and was actually able to prove Joe's innocence and help Joe become exonerated. And so they'll be sharing their stories this week throughout Nebraska. Just got in from Ohio late last night.
So Father Neil, what brought you to hear this information, as far as like you heard about Joe's case somehow? How did that information get to you?
So back in 1998, Joe's mother died in Cleveland, Ohio, and being a death row inmate, he was not allowed to attend the funeral, so I attended in his place. And then after the funeral was over, about 2 weeks later, I visited Joe on death row to talk to him about his mother's funeral, trying to bring a closure to that, some peace to that. And while I was talking to him about that, he was trying to convince me of his innocence and pleading for me to look into his case, because he was at the end of his appeals. And I agreed to look into his case. And I discovered that the things that he was telling me were actually true. And above and beyond that, I discovered more evidence that even Joe was not aware of.
And so, you know, you were kind of uniquely qualified as a reverend. You'd have access to folks as, and then you're also an attorney. So
right.
You had a kind of this knowledge of the law. And I guess what's, you know, for folks that may not have the same luck as Joe to kind of run into the right person who has the kind of the compassion as well as the technical legal details.
Yeah, so I mean, even that was one of the comments that one of the editorial writers for the Cleveland Plain Dealer made, that if it really takes somebody with a nursing degree, a law degree, and a theology degree to come into the cell front of a death row inmate, what kind of hope does anybody else have? And Joe's hope was, after 20 years, getting somebody to listen to his story. And there is a lot of hope out there. I mean, it's the journalism schools, the law schools, the pen pals, people who are just interested in capital punishment, in the death penalty, and just the justice system and the integrity of it. Because the justice system, whether it's state has the death penalty or not, affects us all. And to the extent that we're aware of how the justice system works, then the better off we are, and the better off the system and the inmates are as well.
And so, Joe, you're there, and you finally found somebody that seemed to listen. What was your reaction at that point?
Well, it was real hard to do because up to that point, I was writing everybody, every journalism school, every law school, all the major radio stations, TV stations, everything and anything, and nobody was listening to me. And then I had a human being actually in front of me, and I had to plead my case as best as I could. And the main thing that caught his attention is I have the shortest death penalty trial in the state of Ohio history, 2 3/4 days from Let's Start to You Die. And when I told that to Father Neil, he couldn't understand how they could sentence somebody to die that was never in trouble before with the law, honorably discharged sergeant out of the military. How can I end up on death row? And I'm sitting there telling him I had nothing to do with this at all. And that's what kind of got him going at the beginning of it.
And so you were in there for 20 years for something you didn't do. And I got to kind of wonder, like, how does this happen?
The sad thing is, if you get hooked up into the justice system, if you have no money, power, or influence, you're in trouble. You truly are. If you're just the most common Joe that's out there and don't have a clue of what's going on, it can happen to you, very simply. Because if it could happen to me, it can happen to anybody. And that's the sad and scary part about the whole thing.
And so I guess I got to wonder, you know, well, how long did you have before your sentence would...
Well, actually, I came within 3 days of being executed at one point.
Oh, jeez.
And that was just bad attorney, bad timing, bad everything else. But I had numerous execution dates because they give you an execution date from when you sentence you, and then you get stays as your appeals go on because you have mandatory appeals. And as the appeals were going on, I was getting turned down unanimously by everybody that I was going in front of, and I just couldn't understand how they could not see what I was saying was the truth. And then luckily God stepped in and sent me Father Neil, and everything started going.
And the interesting thing about Joe's case is that the evidence that exonerated him was in existence at the time of the trial. The police had it, the prosecutors had it, and the coroners had the evidence proving his innocence. They hid it from Joe and created a narrative that wasn't true. So the federal courts and the Supreme Court had said, had this evidence been presented at the time of trial, and it could have been because they had it, no reasonable fact finder would have ever found Joe guilty.
Wow, so that's, it just seems sort of, definitely sounds one-sided, you know, as far as like things go. This evidence was present, but of course jurors can't do anything without something right. They haven't heard. So
exactly right.
So what sort of message do you have as far as like what kind of hope for the future you're doing this talk on Wednesday, and I'm sure we'll be able to hear more of your story at that point. What would you like people to take away, or if they could just hear today's talk or today our conversation, what would you want to convey to them?
That you can't take what you hear in the media or what the prosecutor is saying, because a lot of the time it's one-sided. They're only giving what they want out there to be known. You have to dig deeper. To be more aware of what's going on in the system. Because like I said, I never was ever in trouble before with the law. I didn't know anybody that was in trouble with the law. I didn't know any police or prosecutors or anything like that. So until it actually touches your life, you really have not a clue of what's going on in the system. And for it to be so messed up that it can actually execute innocent people or even put them on death row, there's 159 exonerees across the United States. That's 159 times that they call these people the butchers, the murderers, the lowest of the low, and they're totally exonerated now. How can we sit there and have something that is talking about taking their life and be so wrong so many times.
So, you know, Joe and I tell the story, and we tell the story to people who are anti-death penalty, pro-death penalty, and anywhere along the spectrum. And we enjoy talking to people along the spectrum, because the fact of the matter is we don't push an anti-death penalty program. We don't push a pro-death penalty program. We tell a story. Stories are powerful. Narratives are powerful. And so it's a true story, and it's well documented, you know, in the courts all the way up through the United States Supreme Court. And so people need to deal with the truth of the story. And when they deal with the truth of the story and they see the facts of it, I think that the story compels them to ask questions and to say, this isn't right, no matter how you feel about it. The last thing anybody wants to do, I think, anywhere on the spectrum, is to incarcerate and execute an innocent person.
You know, if I can interject for just a second, I'm real curious. This story is something as surreal as out of Kafka's The Trial. How problematic is this wrongful incarceration statistically in America? I mean, do you have any sort of sense for that?
So we know that if we're talking about death penalty per se, we're talking about one in every 10 death sentences has been overturned. So, you know, we're talking about a 10%, you know, fail rate or an innocence rate on that. Which is pretty
high. Those are bad odds.
Yeah, they're very bad odds.
Yeah. When you're talking about putting somebody in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, if you throw somebody in prison for the rest of their lives, you can always release them. You can't release them from the grave.
Right.
You know, when Joe's judge overturned his conviction, she made this comment at the end. She said, you know, Joe, even though justice was delayed in this situation, at least justice did prevail. And I disagreed with her. I mean, I said, you know, no, justice didn't prevail. We got the right decision after 22 years, but justice doesn't keep an innocent man in prison for 22 years. We got the right result, but justice did not prevail.
Right.
So you kind of go in at the age of 26, and you come out, you know, in your 40s, late 40s. What do you do now?
The computer, you got to imagine, when I went in, the World Wide Web didn't exist. Computers were the size of a room. They were on punch cards. Cell phones were the bag phones that were the size of car batteries. You just have to sling it over your shoulder. And then I get out, and everything's on the computer. And I'm still getting used to it. You know, I keep saying, oh, I got to go to the library and look something up. And everyone's like, just Google it, dum-dum. You know, because I'm just not used to everything being at the touch of your fingers. You know, cell phones just amazed me. When I first got out, I had an attorney that was down in Columbus, and I got a phone, and he sent me a picture, and I couldn't understand how he could be taking a picture right then and there and send it to me. Because when I went in, you had to go take your film, get it developed, you know, wait a week or a couple of days, and then get the film back, and then you'd have a picture. And now everything's just instant, and it just utterly amazed me. Prices at least doubled in the time I was gone. And it's just, it's very difficult. And they give you absolutely nothing when they release you. They open the door, and they kick you out, and they hope you'll mess up so they can then rearrest you and say, see, we told you he was bad. Mm-hmm. You know, now if you go in and do your time for the crime, and you get out, there's all kinds of things in place. But for an exoneree, there's absolutely nothing, because we're the dirty little secret.
And Joe's the lucky one, because I employ Joe at my parish. I think he would have a very hard time finding another place to be employed. So he's got a job, he's got benefits, he's got a support group, but that's not the case for most people that come out. You know, they find themselves in very dire situations. And Joe doesn't realize, I think, some of the things he's... You know, he was 22 years in a 10x6 cell. He doesn't handle crowds real well for very long times. You know, he'll be around people, but then he has to get away. He eats very fast because the food went through the food slot, and he had to eat in a certain time and then return the tray. Joe is still trying to learn and maneuver a lot of things that you and I take for granted. One of those things, I think, is the dating game. Joe is... when do you tell a young woman, when you want to date her? You know, do you tell her the before you go out, Do you tell her the first date? If you don't tell her the second, by the first date, and she Googles you in between, she's going to find everything out about him, think Joe's lying to him. If she's okay with it, then she's got to introduce Joe to the family, and maybe dads and uncles are not as forgiving. It's so complicated to move into the life that you and I know after 22 years being isolated.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. So this is it's an amazing story. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking to Father Neil and Joe here at the radio station. We're talking about a couple of events coming up, including a fish fry on Friday from 5:30 to 8:30 at the home of Nancy Groshek. For more information, you can check out www.aadp.info or check out Facebook, Alaskans Against the Death Penalty. Any closing remarks you'd like to kind of wrap up with?
I would just encourage people to be to not take things at face value, to listen to the stories. I was terrified when I first went into a jail, let alone a prison, let alone death row, and I didn't know that what I was encountering. And what really changed me was the stories. When I knew the faces of the men and women on death row in Ohio, and I could put the story behind them, I realized that they were not the monsters or the people that perhaps prosecutors in the justice system wanted to paint them to be.
Well, thank you. Joe?
I just think that you have to keep an open mind and don't let what everyone else is saying be your thoughts. Look into what you want. If you hear something like this and you start researching it, you'll be amazed at what is out there. But if you don't actually look into it, then you have no clue of what's going on around you. And you hear these people all the time talking about, we want to bring the death penalty back, this and that. And until you actually start looking at it, it's amazing how messed up the system is.
And so, Bill, you know, here in Alaska, we kind of have, we used to have the death penalty, and it didn't go so well for certain segments of the population.
Right. Eight out of the nine that were executed were Native Alaskans, and that's kind of the story throughout the United States. It's the minorities are the ones that seem to be getting sentenced to death. And we got rid of the death penalty here in Alaska before we became a state. But Alaskans Against the Death Penalty is here to make sure that we don't ever bring the death penalty back. And we bring up speakers every year with stories and share their stories. And we're confident that the death penalty will not come to Alaska. And Alaskans Against the Death Penalty has also been very supportive of my organization, The Journey of Hope, which is led by murder victim family members that are opposed to the death penalty. And so we work together all really well on sharing our stories. So thank you very much for having us here today.
So where do we go for more information?
Well, www.journeyofhope.org tells about our organization, and we've got a page on there with links that gives links to organizations around the country and around the world.
And so we've been talking with Reverend Neil Kukwith, as well as Joe D'Ambrosio and Bill Pelkey this morning. Thanks for joining us.
And you're welcome. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thanks very much, Frank. Thanks, gentlemen. It is 8:44. David Crosby and Graham Nash next.
The Havasupai tribe opposes a uranium mine near their ancestral land in Arizona. The owners of the Canyon Mine, located near the Grand Canyon, hope to resume uranium mining this year. The tribe is awaiting a court ruling on the issue. We'll talk about this intersection between development and the sacred on the next Native America Calling.
Native America Calling is heard weekday mornings at 9 on KMBA, Alaska's Native Voice. News programming on KMBA sponsored by Siri, the proud owner and operator of Fire Island Wind, powering approximately 6,500 Anchorage homes with affordable, clean, and carbon-free energy. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.